trying to find the key. The rain stopped sometime in the middle of the night. Tricia and Glenn were up as usual at 5 in the morning to get him up and out of the house to head to Magnolia to do his morning radio show. Tricia stayed home to gather up the gear she would need for the day before heading down to Magnolia for her usual Friday morning breakfast with Zeke Collins' widow, Jessica. Zeke Collins was a well-known radio personality from Portsmouth who fell in love with the homemade biscuits and sausage gravy served in a place called Annie's Coffee Cup. He purchased the business back in the mid-60s, renaming it Zeke's Cafe. He also managed to get a license to set up a radio station, which he did on the second floor of what was once a small hotel. When Zeke died, he passed on his business interest to Glenn Michaels, a former radio talk show host who was unexpectedly uprooted from his job in suburban Dallas to come to Magnolia. Jessica maintained her home after her husband died. She became instrumental in pairing her husband's heir with freelance reporter Tricia Knox. Friday mornings, Tricia would make it a point to have breakfast with Jessica, mostly for light conversation and a touch of nostalgia. "I went to Jackson last Friday," Tricia told her mentor after the usual polite greetings were exchanged. "On the way back, I happened into a woman named Sally Brown at the Possum Hollow Cemetery. Do you know her?" "Most people in the county at least know of her," Jessica replied. "Her mother and father are said to have disappeared one morning not long after Zeke set up the radio station. There is speculation that somehow the father lured the mother into the woods up behind the house, killed her, and hid the body so well that she could never be found. There is also talk that they both disappeared into a sinkhole, or that Johnny Ross had Quentin Russell kill them both and hid them where neither one could be found. The official version was that the Browns ran off and left their kids, knowing that Rachel Parrish at the county home would take them in and find them foster homes." "Well, so far I have at least 4 explanations as to what happened," Tricia laughed. "Other than the official version, you've given me 2 other versions. One of them is close to a version I heard from Kitty Granger. She told me that her husband claims that he witnessed a sheriff's deputy kill the mother while the father ran off after them on foot." "I've heard that version, too," Jessica smiled. "No one believes it because of Fred Granger." "Well, I hear tell he was a known liar." "You've heard right. The only person in Fuller County who believes anything he says is his wife. It's no wonder that he does most of his trade in Jackson. No one here would give him the time of day." "Is there anyone who might know the true story behind what happened to the Browns?" Tricia asked. "All of the stories are true, dear. Most stories mellow out over time to become what the teller wants the listener to hear." Jessica stopped for a moment to look around to see if anyone was eavesdropping. For years, Zeke told the story to anyone who would listen that he spent the night in Roy Rogers' home back in California in the mid-50s. Zeke admitted to me that he visited California and that he had found out where Roy lived, but he never spent the night there. "Well, I remember him telling me that story," Tricia admitted. "I thought that it was true. I thought the story was plausible." "The story has some grains of truth to it," Jessica continued. "For instance, Zeke and Roy corresponded with each other for years. I still have some of the letters. Now, mind you, most of the letters Roy sent Zeke were from his publicist, but they're still from Roy Rogers, so he counted it. Everyone tells stories which make them look better in the eyes of others. I wish I had a dollar for every padded resume in Zeke's old file cabinet. And while we're on the subject, I quit counting the number of people I've heard who swore that they actually attended Woodstock." Tricia agreed after hearing a short laugh. The real story about what happened at Possum Hollow back 45 years ago is in there somewhere, Patricia. I know you're going to find it. Just like you found out about Glenn's little secret." "But you know Glenn's secret. You knew about his involvement with Hannah Smith, and you knew why Glenn indirectly caused her death. You could have told me and saved me the trouble." "You're right. I could have, and you could have most likely rejected his company. On the other hand, you're about to find out all by yourself anyway." Tricia thought it over for a few minutes. "You're right," she concluded. "It was a tough nut to crack, though. No tougher than the one you're trying to crack right now. I believe that you have the key to unlocking your mystery, but I think that you're going to have to do more background work before you know what the key is and how you'll use it. Tricia was heartened by Jessica's insight and encouragement. She left the cafe shortly after 9 with high hopes of getting the background Jessica Collins spoke of from Sheriff Roy. Farmer for Fuller, Fuller for Farmer. The yard sign seems to have popped up overnight, both in Magnolia and in Prentice. A billboard on the outskirts of Prentice had the same admonition, along with a picture of Roy Ball's opponent. He was younger and had a military bearing. She recalled meeting him at the county fair back in August, but only briefly. He seemed to be hard-pressed to make any sort of an impression on the voters of Fuller County. It was just in the past couple of weeks that he seemed to be making any headway. "I suppose you're back for more." Sheriff Roy Ball grinned to Tricia as she stood in the doorway to his office. "Yes and no," she replied. "I don't need to look for any more of your records today. I do have a couple of things on my mind, though. Thanks for putting in a good word for me with Judge Shoemaker. The information from the former county home has already provided me with some interesting reading. For another, I was hoping to pick your brain for a minute or two while I'm here." The sheriff pondered for a quick moment. "I suppose I could spare a few minutes, Tricia. Have a seat." She sat down in an overstuffed chair the sheriff had set against the wall to his left. He shifted position to look directly at her while he lounged back in his chair, putting his feet on his desk. "How's married life treating you?" Sheriff Ball usually asked Tricia the same question as an icebreaker. "Better than it was the first time," she smiled, giving him the same answer she had always given him. "Glenn and I keep each other busy to the point that I don't know if I'll ever catch up with the workload I've already assigned myself, and I keep running into more. For instance, when I was downstairs looking at the records the other day, I seem to have turned over a rock and found a few things which I'm stumped about, especially about Johnny Ross. What do you know about him?" "Now there was a character," Roy smiled. "The way I heard it was he was a supply sergeant with Patton's army during the war. He came from somewhere in Kentucky, and when the war was over, he settled here, ran for sheriff, and stayed in office for 20 years. He was a Republican, which seemed odd. As I understood it, the county was pretty much a Democrat stronghold at the time." "You're too young to remember, right?" she asked. "Well, I wasn't born until after he got reelected the first time in '52. All I remember about him was that there's a lot of hullabaloo about the time I was 12 or 13 about what a fool the man was. Hell, he didn't make it through the primaries in '68. Preston Wilmer was a shoo-in." "Well, I've heard that Preston Wilmer looked the part of a sheriff," Tricia remarked. "He sure did. Him and Johnny were cut out of the same cloth. You never could quite trust either of them. There are times when he could be your best friend, and other times when you'd be afraid to look at him for fear he'd shoot first and ask questions later. I come in as a deputy back in '79, at about the same time Preston decided that he wasn't going to run anymore. There was a cloud above his head for a couple of things. People suspected he was being paid on the side. What with living in a house up on Rattlesnake Ridge instead of living in the sheriff's quarters here in Prentice." "Are you talking about the house just west of Possum Hollow?" she interjected. "Yep. Him and Sheriff Ross both lived there at one time or another. Anyway, when Cy Rogers ran back in '80, he promised to clean up the way sheriffs handled business here. Only 3 of us kept our jobs as deputies. So I put in a whole new staff that started poking around in places which made folks feel uncomfortable. He was voted out by a 2-to-1 margin the next election." "So he was the sheriff from about 81 to 85? Tricia asked, knowing the answer from what she had read previously in the library. "That's pretty much it," Roy smiled. "Sheriff Harper stayed on only 8 years after Cy Rogers. He got him a job as commander of a highway patrol post up towards Toledo, then retired from the state about a year ago." "What made you want to run?" "I've been in the business for most of my life, and most everyone here in the county knows me. Hell, after being sheriff for nearly 20 years, you might say I've become part of the furniture," he laughed. "You've been in office almost as long as Johnny Ross," Tricia remarked. "Well, this election I'll pass him, that is, if I get reelected. I'm starting to think that ain't going to happen." He paused for a moment, then quickly added, "I can count on your help, right?" "I'll do what I can," Tricia told him. "Let's get back to Johnny Ross," she said, changing the subject. "He was in office for 20 years, a Republican in a mostly Democratic county. Just how did he manage to stay in for so long?" Roy let out a long sigh. He had connections. Family, friends, buddies from the Army. This fellow Lou Gilbert, who ran Gilbert's Tavern, which used to be just a few doors from here, is said to have been a corporal under Johnny when they were in Europe. He showed up here in Prentice a year or so before Johnny did, flashing lots of money and opening the bar. Wasn't the county dry back then? Well, officially, yes. Unofficially, anyone who wanted to could wet his whistle any time he pleased, if he knew where he could wet it. Fred Palmer, he was a sheriff before Johnny. He took the notion to smash every still and close down every illegal bar in the county, and Gilbert's was first on his list. According to what I heard, when Sheriff Palmer showed up at Gilbert's front door to shut him down, the county commissioners and the county judge were there in various stages of inebriation. They stopped the raid dead cold before it even got started. The way some tell the story, it was Johnny Ross who bribed the officials to keep the raid from happening. That was in February 48. Gilbert's money put him in office and made parts of the county wet in the election later that year. "Are you sure it was Lou Gilbert's money?" Tricia asked. "Speculation, but there always seemed to be a connection between Gilbert and Ross." "What happened to the tavern?" "Lou Gilbert sold the business in 82, brought it back in 85, and died in 93. I held a sheriff's sale of the property just after I was elected to office the first time. Most of the items were purchased by some fellow out of Kentucky named Davis, if I recall. The building was picked up by one of the local realtors who eventually sold it back to the county. Right now, what was Gilbert's is just a parking lot." Sheriff Ball took his feet down, then squared himself to his desk before resuming. "When I first started working for Sheriff Wilmer, we were told to look the other way whenever something came up involving Gilbert's. A couple of deputies pulled me aside the first week on the job and told me to avoid talking with certain people if I wanted to keep working. I found out quick enough that the people Sheriff Wilmer didn't want me to talk to were the feds. They were conducting an investigation. One of the reasons I kept my job once Sheriff Wilmer left was that Cy knew I was cooperating with the investigation. There was this huge turnover when Cy Rogers took office. The deputies who worked for both Sheriff Ross and Sheriff Wilmer faded away, mostly on account of the speculation. The investigation didn't turn up much except to fuel speculation that someone was running an organized crime ring out of back of Gilbert's, most likely Lou Gilbert himself. Gambling, prostitution, illegal liquor. Sheriff Ross and Sheriff Wilmer were most likely taking money from Gilbert and helping him out but it was never proven. There are a few loose ends at the end of the investigation, mostly having to do with the money trail which kept Ross and Wilmer in office as long as they did. The one result of the investigation was the politics were kept out of the office. Sheriff Harper ran as a Republican in 84, then nonpartisan in 88 because of it. As far as I was concerned, it was a good thing. I was elected to enforce the law, not be a politician." "You said there was prostitution involved," Tricia said. "The prostitution pretty much happened during Johnny Ross's term in office, when they were building the energy plant south of Magnolia. It was whispered about when I was in school. Our imaginations ran wild with what a whore might look like," Roy chuckled. Sheriff Ball leaned across his desk and motioned for Tricia to come a little closer. "Miss Smith, Hannah Smith's mother, was most likely one of them." "As in killed in the incident, Hannah Smith?" "As in killed in the incident, Hannah Smith," Roy confirmed. "Woman got around, so I've heard. She had no visible means of support. Can't be proven, but the Smith woman was most likely one of Gilbert's whores." Tricia settled back in her chair. She recalled Glenn telling her that Hannah's mother was pretty much set against him. Perhaps she was trying to keep her daughter from falling into her footsteps. "I didn't find any records of any arrests, either of Sheriff Ross or Sheriff Wilmer," she observed. Was there any prosecution of either of them?" "Well, by the time the investigations of the goings-on at Gilbert's was done, Johnny Ross was showing signs of dementia, and Preston Wilmer had gone on to live in Costa Rica. Didn't make any sense to go after either of them, so the investigation was dropped before any of the evidence was presented to a grand jury. Sheriff Roy got up from his chair while indicating that Tricia needed to stay where she was. He did a quick sweep of the room, making sure that the doors were closed and the blinds were drawn. "Something else you need to know," Roy told Tricia once he was satisfied that they would not be overheard. "The reasons Sheriff Ross and Wilmer were never prosecuted was because of Quentin Russell. He was a chief deputy for a while, but mostly worked outside the law as an enforcer. He had, may even still have, men working for him, too. If I can get a hold of him, or at least one of his men, I'll bet money I'd be able to close the books on the Browns and on several dozen other unsolved crimes held in this county over the last 60 years. "What do you know about Quentin Russell?" Tricia asked. "He was the youngster of the group. He was drafted and sent to Korea just after he turned 18. He came back around 1954 and somehow got hired by Lou Gilbert. For about 10 years, he was highly visible to the point that he didn't need to actually do anything except to send people he trusted to do his work for him. A couple of years before the Brown family disappeared, Quentin became a shadow. He wasn't seen as much, but he sure did become busy. That is, until Cy Rogers got in office. Every once in a while since then, if something bad happened around the county, the most likely culprit was someone acting in Quentin Russell's name." "Russell's men," Tricia observed. "Yep, Russell's men," Roy agreed while he was getting out of his chair. "In my mind, Quentin Russell himself's a little too old to be creating any mischief. Most likely someone wants us to believe that Quentin Russell is still alive in order to cover their own tracks. I'd like to find him to find out the truth. Maybe find out exactly who is responsible for a few things going on around here." "I'd like to find a few of Russell's men," she said softly, recalling the encounter she recently had up at the state park. "Wouldn't we all, especially after them being gone for so long," Roy agreed. Tricia almost decided to tell Roy about the flight with her mother to avoid being spirited away by Russell's men when she was barely 13. Irrational fear prevented her. Part of that fear had to do with her father. He was said to have been part of Russell's men, yet she felt obliged not to betray him. "I know that you usually don't do stories about crime and punishment, Tricia," Roy said, breaking through her temporary fog. "This time I'd like you to consider incorporating whatever it is you're thinking of writing about Crazy Sally into this business going on now with the girls we found here in the past couple of days. I'm thinking the stories are connected." Before Tricia had a chance to leave Roy's office, he interjected just one more comment. "That girl we found out at the rest stop the other day was positively identified as Annie Casey. She was a month away from her 16th birthday. Viewing is tomorrow afternoon, followed by a private burial on Sunday." Tricia made note of the arrangements before leaving Sheriff Roy's office to continue her investigation.